The view only changes for the lead dog. The view only changes for the lead dog. Now, I know this is kind of obtuse, obsolete, yeah, and everything else, but just bear with me and you'll get to it. This is the instant inspiration from Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, here in Campo, California, ready to give you some of his views on the view only changes for the lead dog. Why does the world turn so slowly for many people? The world turns slowly for many people because many people are the flock. Now, Abraham Lincoln is credited with saying, God must have loved the poor people. He made so many of them. Now, I don't think that's nice at all. Abraham Lincoln shouldn't have said that. Abraham Lincoln should have said something like, God must have loved the successful people because he's always helping them be successful. I mean, something like that. That would be a lot better, wouldn't it? But he made so many of them. That's a good excuse for me being poor, you know, because God made so many poor people. Well, we are God. We're the creator of our world. Jesus said, it's done unto us according to our belief, and all that sort of good stuff. But what has that got to do with the view only changes for the lead dog? Well, you look at Discover Magazine, Popular Science, Popular Mechanics, you look at Scientific American, you look at National Geographic, you look at Smithsonian Magazine, you look at all these magazines that have some class to them. Popular Mechanics and Popular Science have class? You bet they do. They're on the leading edge of today's technology. They may seem like they're just mundane magazines, but they're very excellent, very excellent. Now, in those magazines, you read about people who are doing things. You read about people who are magicians, people who are magic with ideas. You read about people who are changing the world with their thought. And they're not big people. Greg tells us, Gregor Mueller, our student who is up north of San Francisco here, he tells us that he has a friend who's, and the name he has given to this friend is landlord, you know. He has a friend, and this friend thought to himself, hey, I think that people who want to quit smoking should have a way to quit. And so he just sat there and he pondered that for a moment. And being a lead dog, he always has his eyes forward of the limitations behind him. He's not looking at the limitations behind him. He's not looking at these things that have tried and failed. He's looking forward at the untried, the untested. And he said, how could I work with people or give them something that's going to allow them to stop smoking and yet not feel all out of shape about it? And that was a very good question. So he asked that to himself, and he meditated upon it. And the days went by, and he thought of other things. He let it go. He released it. He knew that there was no great big panic. He had maybe 20 other ideas that he was thinking about the same thing. And 20 other ideas may be hatching at the right time too. But this one came right out. And he was working in the garden. And as he was working in the garden, the bush scratched him. And he licked it off, cleaned it off, went into the house and washed it off, put some iodine on it. And then he put a little Band-Aid on it, a little circular patch on it. And that stemmed the tide of the blood, and he could go back in the garden and work. He thought, Now, see, he wasn't one single-minded. He was many-minded. He thought of many things. He says, you know, I think if I put some medication on that bandage, on that little circular patch, that when people hurt themselves, they don't have to have iodine and other things, they just put it right on there, and the moisture of the wound makes the medication become active, and it'll make the wound heal fast. And see, these thoughts were going through his mind. And so he did it. He told the men in his laboratory, do this, do that, and they did it. And so now he sold it to Johnson & Johnson, and Johnson & Johnson is now selling it to the world. And he gets his royalty of maybe $500,000 a year, which isn't bad, you know, for one little Band-Aid with medication on it. So the idea still bugged him about stopping smoking, about not wanting to smoke. Now, what is it that encourages us to smoke? Well, we feel something missing in us when we smoke. We feel a lack of self-esteem. We feel that we have to puff on that cigarette or that pipe or something like that because that gives us a nicotine aspect. What does nicotine do for the body? Well, nicotine heightens certain sensations within the body and it dulls others. It has both a negative and a positive aspect to it. And he said, well, now, people like the negative aspect more than the positive. So how would I think about the positive aspect? So he's thinking, what might heighten people's self-esteem and self-respect that comes from cigarette smoking? It's not the cigarette in and out of your mouth. That's not the thing. It's not an oral satisfaction. It's an internal, it's a mental, it's a physiological satisfaction. And so as he thought about this, he again was working in the garden. And he had a little patch on his arm there where he had scratched himself. And he was working away, and all of a sudden he brushed against a nettle. You know what a nettle is? It's one of these things that make you itch. And so as he brushed against that nettle, he said to himself, I wonder, that is causing me to think about the itch and not think about my hurt foot. You know, I'm distracted from one thing to another. And so he says, I wonder if that could have some bearing on the idea of making people have no desire for smoking anymore. So he's not a smoking man, so he didn't think about testing it on himself because it wasn't very good. But he had employees who worked with him in the garden that he hired here and there. And and they smoked. They smoked because they had to have something for their self-esteem, because just being working in his garden for him at the minimum wage was not satisfying, but it was life-giving when they could eat. So he said to them, all right, how many of you guys are willing to be guinea pigs for me? They said, doing what? And he said, just wearing a patch on your arm. There's nothing harmful about it. It'll feel a little itchy, but scientifically, there's nothing that'll hurt you. Nothing that's wrong, bad for you. Now, how did he know that? You know, he didn't. But he knew it inside himself. So he took this patch and he gave it to his employees. And he gave it to his employees' friends who also smoked, who wanted to be part of this because he gave them each $50 for participating in him. And so they did. And within a week, all of these people who started using his patch no longer smoked cigarettes. Within a week. And they no longer had a desire. They didn't know that they weren't smoking anymore. They just weren't smoking because it wasn't a chosen thing that they chose to do. So he naturally took a reading from this and reported this in his paper. And he sent it to the Food and Drug Act, you know. And it was a non-offensive type of medication, and it was a natural thing. And so, therefore, it went through quickly. And he has a company that manufactures this now, and he is quite happily set by it. But what is it about this man? This man is a lead dog. He is up in front of the pack. He is running out in front of everybody. He's paying no attention to all the limiting things. It can't be done. It ain't going to be done. And it's just like Ellen this morning. Ellen was talking to her web and email man on the phone. And he says, well, I've got you this or I got you that. And instead of saying, change it, Ellen says, I don't want that. I don't want this. I don't want that. Well, you see, that's not a lead dog. That's the tail end dog, actually. The lead dog would say to the man, like she finally did, take my name off of that account and put this name on that account. Just change the name. And finally, she had him do that. Well, I don't want God. I don't want this. Don't say what you don't want. Say, this is what I want. Uni Healing. Uni Dean. That's what I want on the two accounts. And so finally, after being argumentative with herself and so forth, and with him, she calmed down and gave him the facts without getting all spaced out about it. But you see, she slowly became a lead dog. She was the tail end for a long time there, while she just argued against things. Argued against things. You know what I'm saying, Ellen? When we argue against things, we're the tail end. The people, the majority of the people in the world, are against war. They're against energy.
Drugs.
Drugs, yes, they're against drugs. But they're against the environmental impact that burning down trees has. They're against this and they're against. Every one of those people are the tail of the dog. They're the back of the pack. The leaders of the pack are not against problems in the world. They're for solutions. They are harmonious with finding the solution that's going to do what they want to do without making a big fuss about it. Now, Carrie Nation, you may have heard of her. She was one of the early women politician women who was against liquor. Oh, that evil, evil liquor. And she went into bars and she cracked open the beer barrels and she did all these things. Well, she made herself quite famous and infamous, if the word probably fits better. But she was against it. And so the government eventually passed laws against it. And they had laws against this and laws against that. And then the government figured, hey, we're losing a lot of revenue here. You know, this isn't too cool. And so the government leaders, the lead pack of the dogs, they said, let us regulate it. Not deny it, but let us regulate it. And so they regulated the sale of liquor. They regulated the sale of tobacco. They regulated the sale of all these things. Now, liquor is still going fine. Alcohol is still selling beautifully. But cigarettes are going by the side. Now the time has come for cigarettes to take the back seat. But if the government had regulated it all the years, the time would have come sooner. But it was always against it. It was what the pack does, the pack of cigarettes. It's what the pack does. It's always following the leader. And in front is always some charismatic, dynamic Billy Graham, or charismatic, dynamic Carrie Nation, or some other person who is into something. We have our Greenpeace people. They make themselves well known. We have our religious leaders. You're going to hell, you know. They make themselves well known. And people like to hear this because they think that they're pretty bad. But if we could take all these people with all this charisma, with all this dynamic quality about them, and turn them into being leaders, the head lead of the pack, lead dog, leaders of the positive solution for whatever it is that turns them on, what wonders would happen? Except it would take a while to develop it because nobody would read it. Nobody reads the newspaper about the happy things. You don't get a new headline in the newspaper because the woman was taken across the street by a Boy Scout. Of course, now you would because that's so rare. But you don't get the headlines because you gave a $100 bill to a tramp who needed to have some money, you know. You don't get the headlines because you found somebody's wallet and you turned it in. You know? You don't get the headlines. And you don't want the headlines either. Every one of these heroes that gets written up in Reader's Digest, dramatic, beautiful, a lovely thing that they've done, saving people's lives and stuff. The real hero might do that. But he runs like the devil as soon as he's done it. He wants no part of all this honor, like Jonathan Livingston Seagull. He didn't want the honor for being able to show the seagulls how to fly and catch the birds, catch the fish by diving into the water. He didn't want the honor. He just wanted to show them the way. And what happened to him? Poof, he became an outcast. Because he was showing them. What would happen to a man who would go and pull the people out of a car and then run after he'd called for help and so forth, you know, and then the help started to come. The minute he saw the police and the fire, then he'd run. What would happen? The firemen wouldn't go to the people who were sick. They'd chase this guy because they thought he did something wrong. Yeah. So you have to sort of sneak away in the crowd. It's like there was a fire in Chicago. No, not a fire. But there was a man in a house who was shooting guns and stuff. And they wanted to get him out. And the police were throwing smoke bombs in and said, come on out, come on out. And the firemen were standing there saying, come on out. And this, you know, the crowd was around. And one of the guys in the crowd said, come on out, Joe, come on out, you know. And then somebody recognized, that's the guy who lives in that house. And he was standing right there playing the game with them, you know. Crazy, isn't it? And this is how it oftentimes goes. So, but that's why people are very careful, enforcers, people aren't too enthusiastic about putting out the fire, or putting out the fire, doing these things, because they think perhaps they might have lit the fire. Mm-hmm. And this is true. We had a fireman here working on our Hermitage, and he was telling us about the fire that was going on around the countryside recently, and how they started, and how they were very busy. And they caught this one fireman who started the fires, because he wanted to get as many fires in before as he could before school started, because he wanted to, you know, then go on another job. But people are crazy, aren't they? Now, what would a leader do? And a man who is so creative to go starting fires, to do whatever he wants to do, what would a creative person, a really leader, do? He would take his enjoyment of fires and learn how to put them out, learn how to control them, learn how to be manager of them. He'd go work for some company that is studying these things, you know, like our friend Rudy Medina. He was a fire chief for the Imperial Valley, and then he retired. But before he retired, he would go down to Mexico once a year, because he's Mexican too, by heritage. He'd go down there once a year, and he would teach the firefighters there how to put out the coal mine fires. Because people were given permission to go into the coal mines in Mexico and take all the coal they wanted. But of course, they had no lamps. So they had something lit, you know, and they go in the coal mine, boom, you know, and up goes the old little chute of coal and took them with it. So he had to show them how to suffocate it and how to take care of it and how to do these things. And he spent his life studying arson and studying putting out fires and studying doing these beautiful things. And he got a chance to be at all these fires. He called me out to a fire one night when I was minister of the church down in El Centro, and he is my board of director member. And he says, Herb, we got a good fire. I need your help. And so I went with him, and we went out to this haystack. You know how the bales of hay stacked on top of top. Well, sometimes it's artificial, combustion, spontaneous combustion. But these weren't. These were arson fires. And he showed me why they were arson fires. Because he's talking about all these things. And here I am pulling with this big hooked arm, pulling the bales off of the others. And, you know, here I am the minister of the church. I'm really not Mr. Gargantua, but I'm doing it. And the enthusiasm of the moment, the enthusiasm. But that's lead men. Lead men doing things in a positive, joyous way. whether it's putting out a fire, whether it's dreaming up a patch for stopping smoking, or whether it's training for Greenpeace, teaching the world, plant more trees and plant them everywhere. I think it'd be beautiful if we could take a plow and run it across the Sahara Desert, because the water is not that deep, and set the Sahara Desert on fire with trees. I don't mean fire, but set it alive with trees, and do the same with the Gobi Desert, and do the same with the deserts out here in California, Mojave Desert. Wouldn't that be beautiful? The water is not far down, but it's just that nobody has ever thought of it in that relationship. But one day it will be, and that will be one of the most beautiful green valleys that we've ever dreamed of, because it was at one time, and it will be again. But you got to be the lead dog, not look at what is and what was, but look at what your dream is that can be. So the view only changes for the lead dog, and each of you are a lead dog. And all of you who hear this message, you are a lead dog, and I expect miracles out of all of you. And when they happen, give me a call. I'd be glad to talk about it. I love you.